The Two Towers, Cassette 6.
They rode in silence for a while, but Legolas was ever glancing from side to side, and would often have halted to listen to the sounds of the wood, if Gimli had allowed it. "These are the strangest trees that ever I saw," he said, "and I've seen many an oak grow from acorn to ruinous age. I wish that there were leisure now to walk among them. They have voices, and in time I might come to understand their thought."
"No, no," said Gimli, "let us leave them. I guess their thoughts already. Hatred of all that goes on two legs, and their speeches of crushing and strangling."
"Not of all that go on two legs," said Legolas. "There I think you're wrong. It is orcs that they hate. For they don't belong here, and know little of elves and men. Far away are the valleys where they sprang. From the deep dales of Fangorn, Gimli. That is whence they come, I guess."
"Then that is the most perilous wood in Middle-earth," said Gimli. "I should be grateful for the part that they've played, but I don't love them. You may think them wonderful, but I've seen a greater wonder in this land, more beautiful than any grove or glade that ever grew. My heart is still full of it." "Strange are the ways of men, Legolas. Here they have one of the marvels of the northern world, and what do they say of it? Caves, they say, caves. Holes to fly in time of war, to store fodder in. My good Legolas, do you know that the caverns of Helm's Deep are vast and beautiful? There would be an endless pilgrimage of dwarves, merely to gaze at them, if such a thing were known to be. Aye, indeed, they would pay pure gold for a brief glance."
"And I would give gold to be excused," said Legolas, "and double to be let out if I strayed in."
"You've not seen, so I forgive your jest," said Gimli. "But you speak like a fool. Do you think those hills are fair, where your king dwells under the hill in Mirkwood, and dwarves helped in their making long ago? They're but hovels compared with the caverns I've seen here, immeasurable halls filled with an everlasting music of water that tinkles into pools as fair as Caladzaram in the starlight. And, Legolas, when the torches are kindled and men walk on the sandy floors under the echoing domes, ah, then, Legolas, gems and crystals and veins of precious ore glint in the polished walls, and the light glows through folded marbles, shell-like, translucent as the living hands of Queen Galadriel. There are columns of white and saffron and dawn rose, Legolas, fluted and twisted into dream-like forms. They spring up from many-colored floors to meet the glistening pendants of the roof. Wings, ropes, curtains fine as frozen clouds, spears, banners, pinnacles of suspended palaces. Still lakes mirror them. A glimmering world looks up from dark pools covered with clear glass. Cities, such as the mind of Durin could scarce have imagined in his sleep, stretch on through avenues and pillared courts, on into the dark recesses where no light can come, and plink! A silver drop falls, and the round wrinkles in the glass make all the towers bend and waver like weeds and corals in a grotto of the sea. Then evening comes, they fade and twinkle out. The torches pass on into another chamber and another dream. There is chamber after chamber, Legolas, hall opening out of hall, dome after dome, stair beyond stair, and still the winding paths lead on into the mountain's heart. Caves, the caverns of Helm's Deep. Happy was the chance that drove me there. It makes me weep to leave them.
Then I'll wish you this fortune for your comfort, Gimli, said the elf, that you may come safe from war and return to see them again. But don't tell all your kindred. There seems little left for them to do, from your account. Maybe the men of this land are wise to say little. One family of busy dwarves with hammer and chisel might mar more than they made.
No, you don't understand, said Gimli. No dwarf could be unmoved by such loveliness. None of Durin's race would mine those caves for stones or ore, not if diamonds and gold could be got there. You cut down groves of blossoming trees in the springtime for firewood. We would tend to these glades of flowering stone, not quarry them. With cautious skill, tap by tap, a small chip of rock, and no more, perhaps, in a whole anxious day, so we could work, and as the years went by, we should open up new ways, and display far chambers that are still dark, glimpsed only as a void beyond fissures in the rock. And lights, Legolas, we should make lights, such lamps as once shone in Khazad Dûm. And when we wished we would drive away the night that has lain there since the hills were made, and when we desired rest, we would let the night return.
You move me, Gimli, said Legolas. I've never heard you speak like this before. Almost you make me regret that I've not seen these caves. Come, let's make this bargain. If we both return safe out of the perils that await us, we'll journey for a while together. You shall visit Fangorn with me, and then I'll come with you to see Helm's Deep.
That would not be the way of return that I should choose, said Gimli. But I'll endure Fangorn, if I have your promise to come back to the caves and share their wonder with me.
You have my promise, said Legolas. But alas, now we must leave behind both cave and wood for a while. See, we're coming to the end of the trees. How far is it to Isengard, Gandalf?
About 15 leagues, as the crows of Saruman make it, said Gandalf. 5 from the mouth of Deeping Coombe to the forge, and 10 more from there to the gates of Isengard. But we shan't ride all the way this night.
And when we come there, what shall we see? Said Gimli. You may know, but I can't guess.
I don't know myself for certain, answered the wizard. I was there at nightfall yesterday, but much may have happened since. Yet I think that you'll not say that the journey was in vain. Not though the glittering caves of Aglaron be left behind. At last the company passed through the trees, and found that they had come to the bottom of the coombe, where the road from Helm's Deep branched, going one way east to Edoras, and the other north to the fords of Isen. As they rode from under the eaves of the wood, Legolas halted and looked back with regret. Then he began a sudden cry.
There are eyes! He said. Eyes looking out from the shadows of the boughs. I never saw such eyes before.
The others, surprised by his cry, halted and turned, but Legolas started to ride back.
No, no, cried Gimli. Do as you please in your madness, but let me first get down from this horse. I wish to see no eyes.
Stay, Legolas Greenleaf, said Gandalf. Don't go back into the wood, not yet. Now is not your time. Even as he spoke, there came forward out of the trees 3 strange shapes. As tall as trolls they were, 12 feet or more in height, their strong bodies, stout as young trees, seemed to be clad with raiment or with hide of close-fitting grey and brown. Their limbs were long, and their hands had many fingers. Their hair was stiff, and their beards grey-green as moss. They gazed out with solemn eyes, but they were not looking at the riders. Their eyes were bent northwards. Suddenly they lifted their long hands to their mouths and sent forth ringing calls, clear as notes of a horn, but more musical and various. The calls were answered, and turning again, the riders saw other creatures of the same kind approaching, striding through the grass. They came swiftly from the north, walking like wading herons in their gait, but not in their speed, for their legs and their long paces beat quicker than the heron's wings. The riders cried aloud in wonder, and some set their hands upon their sword-hilts.
"You need no weapons," said Gandalf. "These are but herdsmen. They're not enemies. Indeed, they're not concerned with us at all."
So it seemed to be, for as he spoke, the tall creatures, without a glance at the riders, strode into the wood and vanished.
"Herdsmen?" said Théoden. "Where are their flocks? What are they, Gandalf? For it's plain that to you, at any rate, they're not strange."
"They are the shepherds of the trees," answered Gandalf.
"Is it so long since you listened to tales by the fireside? There are children in your land who, out of the twisted threads of story, could pick the answer to your question. You have seen Ents, O King,
Ents out of Fangorn Forest, which in your tongue you call the Entwood. Did you think that the name was given only in idle fancy?
Nay, Theoden, it is otherwise. To them you are but the passing tale. All the years from Eorl the young to Theoden the old are of little count to them, and all the deeds of your house but a small matter.
The king was silent.
Ents, he said at length, out of the shadows of legend I begin a little to understand the marvel of the trees, I think. I've lived to see strange days. Long we've tended our beasts and our fields, built our houses, wrought our tools, or ridden away to help in the wars of Minas Tirith, and that we called the life of men, the way of the world. We cared little for what lay beyond the borders of our land. Songs we have that tell of these things, but we are forgetting them, teaching them only to children, as a careless custom. And now the songs have come down among us out of strange places, and walk visible under the sun.
You should be glad, Theoden King, said Gandalf, for not only the little life of men is now endangered, but the life also of those things which you have deemed the matter of legend. You're not without allies, even if you know them not.
Yet also I should be sad, said Theoden, for however the fortune of war shall go, may it not so end that much that was fair and wonderful should pass for ever out of Middle-earth?
It may, said Gandalf. The evil of Sauron cannot be wholly cured, nor made as if it had not been. But to such days we are doomed. Let us now go on with the journey we've begun.
The company turned then away from the coombe and from the wood, and took the road toward the fords. Legolas followed reluctantly. The sun had set, already it had sunk behind the rim of the world, but as they rode out from the shadow of the hills and looked west to the gap of Rohan, the sky was still red, and a burning light was under the floating clouds. Dark against it there wheeled and flew many black-winged birds. Some passed overhead with mournful cries, returning to their homes among the rocks.
"The carrion fowl have been busy about the battlefield," said Aelmer.
They rode now at an easy pace, and dark came down upon the plains about them. The slow moon mounted, now waxing towards the full, and in its cold silver light the swelling grasslands rose and fell like a wide grey sea. They'd ridden for some 4 hours from the branching of the roads when they drew near to the fords. Long slopes ran swiftly down to where the river spread in stony shoals between high grassy terraces. Borne upon the wind, they heard the howling of wolves. Their hearts were heavy, remembering the many men that had fallen in battle in this place. The road dipped between rising turf banks, carving its way through the terraces to the river's edge, and up again upon the further side. There were 3 lines of flat stepping stones across the stream, and between them fords for horses that went from either brink to a bare eyot in the midst. The riders looked down upon the crossings, and it seemed strange to them, for the fords had ever been a place full of the rush and chatter of water upon stones, but now they were silent. The beds of the stream were almost dry, a bare waste of shingles and grey sand.
"This is become a dreary place," said Aelmer.
"What sickness has befallen the river? Many fair things Saruman has destroyed. Has he devoured the springs of Isen too?"
"So it would seem," said Gandalf.
"Alas," said Theoden, "must we pass this way, where the carrion beasts devour so many good riders of the mark?"
"This is our way," said Gandalf. "Grievous is the fall of your men, but you shall see that at least the wolves of the mountains do not devour them. It is with their friends, the orcs, that they hold their feast. Such indeed is the friendship of their kind. Come."
They rode down to the river, and as they came the wolves ceased their howling and slunk away. Fear fell on them, seeing Gandalf in the moon, and Shadowfax's horse shining like silver. The riders passed over to the islet, and glittering eyes watched them wanly from the shadows of the bank.
"Look," said Gandalf, "friends have laboured here."
And they saw that in the midst of the Ayat a mound was piled, ringed with stones, and set about with many spears.
Here lie all the men of the mark that fell near this place, said Gandalf.
Here let them rest, said Éomer, and when their spears have rotted and rusted, long still may their mount stand and guard the fords of Isen.
Is this your work also, Gandalf, my friend? Said Théoden.
You accomplished much in an evening and a night.
With the help of Shadowfax and others, said Gandalf.
I rode fast and far, but here beside the mound I'll say this for your comfort. Many fell in the battles of the fords, but fewer than rumour made them. More were scattered than were slain. I gathered together all that I could find. Some men I sent with Grimbold of Westfold to join Erkenbrand. Some I set to make this burial. They have now followed your marshal, Elfhelm. I sent him with many riders to Edoras. Saruman, I knew, had dispatched his full strength against you, and his servants had turned aside from all their errands and gone to Helm's Deep. The land seemed empty of enemies, yet I feared that wolf-riders and plunderers might ride nonetheless to Medoseld while it was undefended. But now I think you need not fear. You'll find your house to welcome your return.
And glad shall I be to see it again, said Théoden. Though brief now, I doubt not, shall be my abiding there.
With that the company said farewell to the island and the mound, and passed over the river, and climbed the further bank. Then they rode on, glad to have left the mournful fords. As they went, the howling of the wolves broke out anew. There was an ancient highway that ran down from Isengard to the crossings. For some way it took its course beside the river, bending with it east and then north, but at the last it turned away and went straight towards the gates of Isengard, and these were under the mountainside in the west of the valley, 16 miles or more from its mouth. This road they followed, but they did not ride upon it, for the ground beside it was firm and level, covered for many miles about with short springing turf. They rode now more swiftly, and by midnight the fords were nearly 5 leagues behind. Then they halted, ending their night's journey, for the king was weary. They were come to the feet of the misty mountains, and the long arms of Nan Kurunir stretched down to meet them. Dark lay the vale before them, for the moon had passed into the west, and its light was hidden by the hills. But out of the deep shadow of the dale rose a vast spire of smoke and vapour. As it mounted, it caught the rays of the sinking moon, and spread in shimmering billows, black and silver, over the starry sky.
"What do you think of that, Gandalf?" said Aragorn. "One would say that all the wizard's veil was burning."
"There is ever a fume above the valley in these days," said Éomer. "But I've never seen aught like this before. These are streams rather than smoke.
Saruman is brewing some devilry to greet us. Maybe he's boiling all the waters of Isen, and that's why the river runs dry."
"Maybe he is," said Gandalf. "Tomorrow we shall learn what he's doing. But now let's rest for a while, if we can."
They camped beside the bed of the Isen River. It was still silent and empty. Some of them slept a little. But late in the night the watchman cried out, and all awoke. The moon was gone. Stars were shining above, but over the ground there crept a darkness blacker than the night. On both sides of the river it rolled towards them, going northward.
"Stay where you are," said Gandalf. "Draw no weapons. Wait, and it will pass you by."
A mist gathered about them. Above them a few stars still glimmered faintly. But on either side there arose walls of impenetrable gloom. They were in a narrow lane between moving towers of shadow. Voices they heard, whisperings and groanings, and an endless rustling sigh. The earth shook under them. Long it seemed to them that they sat and were afraid, but at last the darkness and the rumour passed, and vanished between the mountain's arms. Away south upon the Hornburg, in the middle night men heard a great noise, as a wind in the valley, and the ground trembled. and all were afraid, and no one ventured to go forth. But in the morning they went out and were amazed, for the slain orcs were gone, and the trees also. Far down into the valley of the deep the grass was crushed and trampled brown, as if giant herdsmen had pastured great droves of cattle there. But a mile below the dike a huge pit had been delved in the earth, and over its stones were piled into a hill. Men believed that the orcs whom they had slain were bedded there, but whether those that had fled into the wood were with them, none could say, for no man ever set foot upon that hill. The Death Down it was afterwards called, and no grass would grow there. But the strange trees were never seen in Deeping Combe again. They had returned at night, and had gone far away to the dark dales of Fangorn. Thus they were revenged upon the orcs. The king and his company slept no more that night, but they saw and heard no other strange thing save one. The voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke. There was a rush of water hurrying down among the stones, and when it had passed, the ice and flowed and bubbled in its bed again, as it had ever done. At dawn they made ready to go on. The light came grey and pale, and they didn't see the rising of the sun.